ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
Election week is upon us, and it will be all eyes on the results as they start trickling in from across the country. Daily Maverick associate editor Ferial Haffagy takes a break from her election road trip to discuss some of the biggest headlines. Here's what's coming your way on this week's episode of The Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. Political killings are on the increase. Could it get worse pending the election outcomes? Later, President Cyril Ramaphosa is eager to sign off on yet another bill. Why you should care about the so-called spy bill.
I do not remember, as somebody who's covered government and the presidency for decades now, you're seeing already this securitization, this infringement of private information much, much more than you've ever done before.
Then, are we facing a mental health crisis? Some experts say yes, and it's all because of that smartphone in your hand. And we celebrate the appointment of our new Chief Justice. Let's get into it. Ferial, welcome back to The Whole Week Wrap. It's been far too long. How are you doing?
Good. A little bit busy with elections, but happy to be back with you.
Definitely. Yeah, it's going to be a mad couple of weeks, but we're ready for it. We have lots of coffee and that's all that matters, right? So with just a few days to go before elections, it seems there's still a lot of uncertainty in the hearts and minds of many South Africans. A couple of surveys were released last week that showed many voters still don't know who they will be voting for on the 29th of May. I can say that I'm one of those undecided voters, and I hate that I'm now in a position really where I have to essentially choose the lesser evil.
So I guess it's the first time that we have so much choice, and probably that's why people are taking so long to make up their minds. I think what's good about this election is that the ANC has lost its hegemonic power over the electorate. It may still very well form a government, but it does mean that people are opening themselves up to new political parties, of which we've seen many, some exciting, some not so exciting. Mm. But it does mean that this is the biggest undecided vote that we've seen in several elections.
And it's been said many times by various organizations and individuals that this year's elections could mark a turning point for the country. Many voters have clearly lost faith in government. Some of them, even diehard ANC supporters, saying that they just simply cannot vote for the party again. Do you anticipate some dramatic outcomes in this year's elections?
In and of itself, it will be dramatic in that we'll see the end of single party majority rule, which is what we've experienced for 30 years with the ANC as a liberation movement turned political party. This election is definitely going to crack that. Some recent numbers I've seen suggest that the party could get anywhere from 46 to 51 in the early 50s. So I don't think it's going to be such dramatic changes at government level. But what it does show us is the trend line shows we're now a normal democracy. What disappointed me very much is that 13 million South Africans didn't even bother to register to vote. So that's the number we've already said they're not going to turn out on May 29th. And then most people are expecting a medium turnout, and that's about anywhere from 58 to 65% of those people who have registered are likely to turn out in the day. By next week, this time, we should be able to calculate what the stay away numbers are. And then that's telling us very big things about what people believe or don't believe about the ability of elections to change their life.
And I'm especially interested to see how and where potential coalitions could start forming, because as you've just said, that's definitely on the cards for a lot of regions across the country. But it's also going to be interesting to see what happens in KZN as the MK party and EFF and the IFP battle it out for votes. But what else will you be keeping an eye on in the next week or so once the results start rolling in?
So I'm very keen to see if we'll have the outbreak of peace, which I attended at the IEC National Results Center. I think, as usual, the IEC is well organized. I also saw a briefing about how security forces are well organized into the hotspots, and those hotspots are largely in KwaZulu-Natal, where the competition between the ANC, MK, and also with the EFF there has become quite intense and violent on some occasions. So I do hope it's going to be all eyes on that to ensure we have another peaceful election, which is free and fair. And then I'm watching very closely, because this election result will be written in KwaZulu-Natal and in Gauteng. So those are the areas where I have closest eyes on. I'm also really keen to see whether the Free State might hold some surprises for us.
Between January and April 2024, at least 10 people were killed in political hits. In 2023, 31 assassinations were recorded. The battle for political control in regions and provinces across the country is heating up, as shown in the latest report by the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime. With elections just days away, the report highlights just how detrimental these killings are to our democracy.
Now, speaking of election outcomes, a recent report by the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime has homed in on political killings in South Africa, and this kind of feeds into the election conversation as well. Now, titled The Politics of Murder, Criminal Governance, and Targeted Killings in South Africa, the report warns that politically motivated hits are on the increase. And with the fight for power across the country, the report suggests that we could see more individuals in power getting killed. And they have specifically highlighted the fact that we are entering this pivotal election period. The report comes after the National Security Cluster assured South Africans that all measures are in place to prevent any violence. But I want to hear from you, what do you make of this report?
So I think that on the day, if those deployments are correct, as we've seen the cluster saying, if the intelligence informing where they think there may be problems, and they've put many, many thousands of police officers, the army on standby, etc. I think that on the day, we should see a relatively peaceful election, or at least that's what I pray. But the story of the political assassinations and political hits, they've only become more and more intense, especially at the local council level, as we've seen coalition governments begin to shape and political competition become more intense. There's every indication that this election is going to see many, many people either lose their jobs, and then the competition for tenders begin to pick up. So I do hope that good intelligence, which underpinned the JCPS cluster report, that it continues, because as the GTOC, that's the Transnational Organization for Studying Organized Crime, has found, it is indeed a huge trend line and a growing one in our political landscape.
And the report also explained, which I found interesting, not surprising, but interesting, is how some individuals in local government are at times working with notorious gangs in their areas, specifically to maintain control of the various tenders. I know in this report they mentioned the construction mafia, which is one of them, ordering hits on other officials who might pose a threat. And unfortunately, another thing that was highlighted in this report is that innocent people also pay the ultimate price, because these hitmen are just indiscriminate. They don't care who they hit in the process. So innocent bystanders often end up dying as well. Do you get a sense that government is taking this trend seriously, or are they just writing it off as gang violence and turf wars and pretty much denying that this is in fact a political problem?
I've not seen them taking it seriously, because competition for tenders, of course, means that you should look at a couple of factors. One is the contracting out of what should be government services. So if you're going to try and understand why these political hits are happening, you have to consider why it is that so much of what government should be doing itself, public services, is being contracted out. And I think that's a very, very difficult one for them to look in the eye, Lizanne, because so many cadres are, of course, as we've seen, benefiting from the round-tripping of these tenders, they're getting something. So it would mean quite existential things if they begin to take seriously this threat. But if we do, then certainly that's one of the key things to look at, as well as the obvious ones: better investigations, better prosecutions, better abilities to use detective services and intelligence systems to understand where the key organizations of crime, of this kind of organized crime, does happen at local government level. And certainly in my work in Johannesburg, I haven't really seen serious attention to that detail.
Outer has called it too totalitarian, while others have said it puts whistleblowers and truth tellers in immediate danger. The General Intelligence Laws Amendment Bill, or GILAB, was adopted by Parliament on the 24th of March, and it becomes yet another bill President Cyril Ramaphosa is all too eager to sign into law. Aimed at giving security forces greater access to anyone's private data, whether it be telephonic or online, has caused several civil society organizations to sound the alarm and urged government to rethink this far too vague spy bill.
Now, let's talk all things national security. Last week, the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, or the JSCI, finally released its annual report, a year late, but they released it, on the activities of the State Security Agency, or SSA. It's one of the rare opportunities for the public to really get a glimpse into the workings of our intelligence forces and to hold them to account. But the report handed over to Parliament last week was really overly vague. I mean, it's not surprising considering the SSA is always hidden behind a veil of secrecy. But with this veil of secrecy, the body is seemingly acting like mavericks at times. I mean, we've done stories on it. Daily Maverick has done several stories. What are your thoughts on the state of our security agency? And are you concerned about the SSA?
So the Inspector General of Intelligence's report table this week, like my colleague Marianne Merton wrote, large portions of it are completely redacted. So it's difficult to make a call when the level of transparency is almost null, and where the coming intelligence bill being, well, it's awaiting the president's signature, in fact makes things more opaque and less transparent. So to be honest with you, I couldn't give a real opinion other than as a South African who lives in a city where you can see critical infrastructure being ripped out every day by cable theft. There is absolutely zero impact of intelligence on being able to crack the very organized crime groups who are behind this, who are behind taking out our critical infrastructure. And for me, that's the biggest symbol that tells you that the overhaul hasn't been good enough and the levels of transparency over intelligence are not there, as we saw in Parliament this week.
Yes, yes. And of concern, as you've just mentioned, is government's determination to really push through the highly controversial General Intelligence Laws Amendment Bill, or GILAB, which aims to give the SSA unfettered access to personal information of any individual they deem to pose a threat to the country. In total, 38 civil society organizations, including Section 27, My Vote Counts, Open Secrets, and the Helen Suzman Foundation, have urged government to reconsider how it intends on spying on individuals or institutions, stating that, quote, the bill's definition of person or institution of national security interest is so broad that it potentially gives the state the power to vet any private individual or institution. Now, from a general public perspective, this is a concerning bill, but from a media freedom standpoint, this bill simply cannot be pushed through in its current form. I mean, it is terrifying if you think about it.
It is. And I mean, if you, as we'll know as journalists from working in the field, if you want to cover anything, for example, by the presidency, by many government departments, you have to go through levels of security checks, which I do not remember. As somebody who's covered government and the presidency for decades now, you're seeing already this securitization, this infringement of private information much, much more than you've ever done before. And I think this, like the NHI and possibly like Bella, the Basic Education Laws Amendment Bill, are going to end up, if the president signs intelligence and the education amendment laws, they are going to end up in court with many, many people bringing lawsuits against them.
Your mobile phone can be a gateway to a world unexplored, but it can also lead to serious mental health issues. As our worldviews and ideas of self are increasingly being formed by what we see, hear, and read online, experts say we could be entering an era where anxiety and depression could become the new norm for individuals worldwide. So, do we have another epidemic knocking at our door?
I want to move over to our next topic, and it's all things tech. You know, I always love talking about tech. As much as it freaks me out, I also love the developments. And of course, this week is no different. So recently, I started reading a book by social psychologist Jonathan Haidt titled The Anxious Generation. And I saw Daily Maverick also published someone's review on this book, and I just thought this is a great opportunity to chat about it. Now, it's a fascinating read that comes with a strong warning, and that is that those born in the late 90s and beyond face an increased risk of depression and general anxiety. Why, you may ask? Because they grew up in the golden age of technology. You know, when mobile phones became easily accessible for most people, the internet became a thing and all of that. Now, Haidt refers to this period as the Great Rewiring, and he goes as far as calling it an epidemic. But an interesting question was raised by some, including in this Daily Maverick article. Some people just say we don't agree with his take on this. Instead, the question should be, are younger generations merely depressed and anxious? Because they should be depressed and anxious. Because, I mean, just look at the world around us. Where do you stand on this debate? Do you think we are heading towards generations that will be more depressed, will face more mental health issues because of mobile phones?
So I was on a panel with Prof. Irma Iloff of the University of Pretoria last week, and she also noted that we are really in a mental health epidemic in our country and then obviously in the world, although she studies our country. And I've seen very many studies which show the impact of tech on mental ill health. And why is that? Is because people are comparing themselves so much more than ever before with almost like unobtainable lives. This is just the work I've read. And then obviously your own experience is that you're always on. You're almost never in rest state, but you're always in always on state. And that can't at all be good for us. So I do agree with the thesis of the book, but then the thing I study much more is to look at what do we do about this? You know, how do you switch off from this ubiquitous connection to our devices and to information? And I must say, I'm not sure about you, but I find that a very hard task, a real discipline to switch off that phone and to switch off your own mind sometimes.
I definitely know that, you know, just from my experience, just being constantly connected to these vast online networks 24/7 is not good for your mental health, because as you've mentioned, there is that element of wanting to compare yourself, but you're also being bombarded with so much negative events and news, and it just builds up and the anxiety gets more and more. I often experience this anxiety as online editor because I live online.
Yes.
And it does get a bit much at times. And especially for me, combined with the real world issues, it just amplifies that sense of hopelessness and loneliness for some people. And I think that is where the problem really comes in. So for me, I find that it's crucial to just kind of switch off. And it's very difficult to do, but sometimes just leave your phone in the other room, just walk away from it, unplug for a bit, and really just experience the people and live in the moment. I know it sounds very cliche, but it's all about balance. And I think this easy access to online information and conversations and connections is just, that's not how we're supposed to live.
So I just want to share with you another thing that Prof. Iloff said that I really enjoyed. And it was the launch of the Human Sciences Research Council's latest State of the Nation volume. And it's on well-being and quality of life. And she said that she thought we should develop another index in our country, and that's a well-being index. So it measures things like your state of mental health, our state of anxiety. Countries like New Zealand, some in the Scandinavian countries are beginning to do so as well. And I must say, I found it really interesting is that if you take these measures, rather than our kind of raw data of poverty, unemployment, and inequality, it gives you a sense of how people are feeling rather than like just the hard stats of the quality or not of their lives. So I thought that was a really lovely contribution.
In August this year, current Chief Justice Raymond Zondo will step down after serving a mandatory 12-year term. Ready to take over the role is current Deputy Chief Justice Mandisa Maya, making her South Africa's first female Chief Justice. Personally nominated by President Cyril Ramaphosa himself, Maya has a tough job ahead of her.
So I want to wrap things up with, it's sort of a green shoot, but it also has a bit of controversy around it. But let's go with the green shoot because we love being positive at the end of every show. So this week's green shoot is all about the ladies, and Mandisa Maya has been officially appointed our new Chief Justice, and she's the first female Chief Justice. And I mean, I read through her bio. She's quite fierce, I must say. She's not soft at all. She started off as a court interpreter, and then she became prosecutor. She's worked all over the world. She's really been representing South Africa in a great way. So I do want to celebrate that aspect of the conversation today.
Absolutely. I think it's been such a huge moment, and I wish I could have gone to sit in the interviews and plan like a proper in-depth essay because it's massive, but it's coming 4 days before an election. So I feel like we haven't celebrated the importance of this moment, and it's something that I hope Carte Blanche, Daily Maverick, the rest of us will give proper and refined attention to. And it's a moment that really deserves celebration.
And I just want to finally just wrap up this conversation by just also reminding people that regardless of where you stand in terms of her appointment, she has been appointed. So I think for the sake of our country, we should all support her because she definitely does not have an easy job ahead of her. I really just want to wish her all the best in the coming years. And yeah, we will definitely be keeping an eye on her. The country needs good people in strong and senior positions, and we should all get behind her, as I've said, for the sake of our country.
Absolutely. Look forward to celebrating Chief Justice Mandisa Maya Day once she takes that green cloak.
Yes, definitely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to us today, Ferial. It was lovely having you back on. It's been way too long, so this has been an absolutely wonderful chat.
Lovely to chat, and vote well.
Yes, you do. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Catch us again next week for another Whole Week Wrap. Until then, why not join the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else? We always love hearing from you.